All right, diving into some really fascinating stuff today. We're looking at the Gospel of John, chapters 2 and 3, and it's like stepping right into the middle of Jesus' early ministry. And wow, things get intense. Showdown in the temple, a secret meeting with Nicodemus, even some maybe a little rivalry with John the Baptist's followers. It's
a lot going on.
It's a lot. It's like a biblical mystery, but with, you know, eternal stakes.
And what's so interesting is how John, the writer of the gospel, he doesn't treat these as separate events. It's like he weaves them together, you know, hints that there's something bigger we're supposed to see.
Yeah, okay, so let's start with the temple, right? You've got Jesus, who's usually peaceful, suddenly flipping tables, scattering coins. It's not exactly the image on those inspirational posters.
No, not at all. It really grabs your attention. And it raises all these questions, right? Because the text itself doesn't actually say the buying and selling was wrong. So it seems like it was more about the where and the how, not the what that was happening.
So like maybe hawking souvenirs right in the holy space.
Felt sexy.
Exploitative.
Exactly. Profaning the temple. Remember, this wasn't just any building. It was the dwelling place of God, right? It was supposed to be for prayer, worship, not a market.
Right, right. But still, flipping tables, that seems a bit out of character now.
Well, think about it. This shows us how strongly Jesus felt about true worship, about God's house being used correctly. And I think John wants us to look at our own hearts, you know? Do we have that same passion, or are we just going through the motions?
Yeah, good point. Okay, then from this chaos in the temple, we shift to this hush-hush meeting at night. Here comes Nicodemus, this top religious scholar. But he comes to Jesus all sneaky-like. What's with the secrecy? Was he just a fan of late-night philosophy chats?
Well, imagine being Nicodemus for a second. You're a Pharisee, a respected leader, right? And here's Jesus, controversial figure, challenging everything. It was risky to be seen with him.
So, kind of like meeting your favorite celebrity, but afraid your friends will make fun of you. But higher stakes, obviously.
Uh-huh. Yeah, something like that. But for Nicodemus, it was his reputation, his position, maybe even his safety.
Wow. So he must have been really intrigued by Jesus to take that chance.
Absolutely. And that's what makes their talk so interesting. Nicodemus starts praising Jesus, but Jesus just kind of ignores it and goes right into this confusing statement about being born again.
And Nicodemus is lost. Takes it totally literally at first, right?
Right. Now, born again, that might seem straightforward to us today, but for someone like Nicodemus, steeped in Jewish tradition, it would have had a whole different set of meanings. Back then, there was this longing for national restoration, for God to fulfill his promises to Israel. And prophets like Isaiah and Ezekiel, they talked about God cleansing and renewing his people, giving them new hearts.
So born again was tied to this hope of the whole nation being reborn.
Exactly. And that's what makes Jesus' word so radical. He's taking this idea and applying it not to a nation, but to individuals. He's saying, you don't have to wait for some far-off event. God's power is available right now to you.
Whoa. So it's forget waiting for a political revolution. The real one starts within. But Nicodemus, stuck in his old ways, just couldn't get it.
Exactly. He's so focused on the external, the rules, that he misses the internal transformation Jesus is talking about. And it's not just Nicodemus, right? It's a challenge for all of us to go beyond just surface level religion and let God actually work on our hearts, you know?
It's like Jesus is speaking a different language, you know? No wonder Nicodemus is struggling to keep up.
And that's what makes it so rich, right? Like peeling back layers of an onion, there's always more. For example, even the phrase born of water and spirit, it's caused endless debate.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Some connect it to natural birth, some to baptism, some to a more like mystical experience.
So nobody really knows. That's a little frustrating.
Well, it's not that nobody knows. It's more like John, he's inviting us into the mystery, right? Okay. Encouraging us to wrestle with it. But here's a clue. Think back to those Old Testament prophecies we talked about. They often use water and spirit to represent God's cleansing renewal.
Oh, okay.
Right. Like a spiritual washing machine, getting rid of all the gunk.
So born of water and spirit, maybe it's not a specific ritual, but more about that internal change God wants to do in us.
Precisely. Like a caterpillar transforming into a butterfly. Not just a surface change, a complete metamorphosis. And this new life, it's offered to everyone, not just the religious elite.
That's pretty radical for the time, right? Back then, religion was all about rules, doing the right things to please God. But Jesus is flipping the script.
Exactly. Shifting the focus from actions to the internal transformation. And that's why Nicodemus, with all his knowledge of the law, is so confused. He's trying to put this new idea into his old way of thinking, and it doesn't fit.
Like trying to solve a jigsaw puzzle with the wrong pieces. But I gotta admit, I'm a little confused too. Why speak in riddles? Why not just say what he meant?
Well, that's the beauty of how Jesus taught. He doesn't just hand out answers. He invites us on a journey, you know? By using paradoxes, he makes us think deeply, question what we assume, and grapple with the truth ourselves.
So like planting seeds that'll grow into understanding.
Exactly. And that's what John is doing in the gospel, too. He's not just giving us a timeline of Jesus's life, but crafting a narrative that's meant to challenge us, change us. He uses symbolism, irony, foreshadowing to pull us into the mystery of Jesus. He even leaves some things open to interpretation, like the exact location of this meeting with Nicodemus. It happens at night, shrouded in secrecy.
Ooh, that's interesting. What do you think John's getting at with that?
Well, night can symbolize lots of things. Darkness, hiddenness, even fear. Maybe it reflects Nicodemus's own struggle, his fear of stepping out of the shadows and embracing the truth.
Or maybe it's a reminder that sometimes the most profound encounters happen in the quiet, hidden places of our lives. Speaking of encounters, we haven't talked much about John the Baptist. What's his role in all this?
Ah, John the Baptist. Remember, he paved the way for Jesus, the voice in the wilderness, prepare the way. And here, we see him struggling with the fact that his ministry is fading as Jesus becomes more popular.
And his followers are kind of jealous. Like, hey, what about our guy? He baptized you, Jesus.
Exactly. But John's response is so powerful. He could have gotten defensive, tried to compete, but instead, he's incredibly humble.
The best man, not the groom analogy.
Exactly. He compares himself to the best man whose joy comes from seeing the groom happily married. John's not threatened by Jesus's success because he understands his purpose is to point people to Jesus, not himself.
That's a powerful lesson. Recognizing it's not about us, it's about something much bigger.
Absolutely. And true leadership isn't about taking the spotlight. It's about shining it on others.
So we've got Jesus challenging the status quo, Nicodemus wrestling with spiritual rebirth, and John the Baptist stepping aside. Everyone trying to find their place in this unfolding story.
And that's the beauty of John's gospel. It doesn't give us easy answers. It invites us into the mystery, the struggle, the beauty of faith. And in doing that, it challenges us to find our place in the story.
What strikes me about John the Baptist is it's not just that he's humble, but he really seems to get who Jesus is. Not just a colleague or rival, but something more.
Yeah, you're onto something there. Remember, John saw the Spirit come down on Jesus at the baptism, and it stayed on him. Well, in chapter 3, we hear God gives the Spirit to Jesus without limit, like this overflowing source of power.
Not just a temporary boost, it's a permanent upgrade.
Exactly. That's what makes Jesus different from any prophet before. He's not just talking about God, he's speaking as God, with that Spirit empowering him.
Makes those clashes with the religious leaders even more intense, right? If Jesus has this authority, no wonder they felt threatened.
Absolutely. And that tension just keeps building in the rest of John's gospel. But John isn't just telling a dramatic story. He's using these moments to show us something deep about Jesus, his identity, his purpose.
Yeah. Back to Nicodemus for a sec. We left him kind of confused after that talk with Jesus. Does he ever, you know, show up again, figure things out?
Well, that's the thing. John doesn't tie it all up neatly. He leaves some things open, makes us think.
Yeah.
But Nicodemus does reappear a couple times later on. And what he does suggests something changed in him after meeting Jesus.
Oh, like what?
For example, when the leaders are trying to arrest Jesus, Nicodemus speaks up for him, reminds them they should at least listen before condemning. Pretty brave, considering the risk.
So maybe that seed Jesus planted is starting to grow.
Seems like it. And then get this, Nicodemus helps bury Jesus after the crucifixion. That would have been scandalous for a Jewish leader.
Wow, so he goes from sneaking around to standing with Jesus, even in death. That is a big change. But I still wonder, did he really understand what being born again meant?
We can't know for sure. John leaves that open. But maybe that's the point. Faith isn't always a straight line. It's twists, turns, doubts, discoveries. Sometimes the biggest changes happen slowly, under the surface, like a seed taking root.
That journey inward, right?
Exactly. And that's the journey John wants us to take, not just surface understanding, but letting Jesus' words get into our hearts, challenge us, change us from the inside out.
So wrapping up this deep dive, I'm left wondering, what does being born again mean for me? One-time thing or a process?
Great question, and one we each have to figure out. But here's the thought. Maybe it's not so much about a single moment, but a constant surrendering to how God wants to change us. Letting the Spirit work on us, make us who we're meant to be.
Less about checking a box, more like an ongoing adventure.
Exactly. And it's an adventure full of surprises, challenges, but ultimately incredible joy. Because when God's love transforms us, we find a freedom, a purpose that nothing else can give.
That's a pretty great way to end things. Thanks for taking us on this deep dive. I'm feeling ready for that adventure.